I'm Jamie Seeker, and this is What It Takes. Each episode, I sit down with real business owners to talk about their journey, the wins, the challenges, and everything in between. Let's dive in. Today's guest is someone who has built not only a powerhouse law firm, but also a legacy of compassion in the legal world. Kyle Backus is the co-founder of Backus & Shanker, based in Denver, Colorado, one of the largest and most respected personal injury law firms in the region. But his journey began long before that. At just 17 years old, Kyle won his first argument in front of a mock Supreme Court, and that moment lit a fire in him to pursue justice for others. After graduating from the University of Florida College of Law, he moved to Colorado and, with less than $15,000, co-founded a firm that now represents thousands of clients. But what truly sets Kyle apart is how deeply personal his work has become for him. After nearly 25 years of helping families navigate wrongful death cases, Kyle tragically lost his own mother in a crosswalk accident, an experience that profoundly shaped his mission and led him to write the best-selling book, Unthinkable, A Guide for Families Facing Catastrophic Loss. Kyle is a business leader, a father, and someone who has built a career not just on winning cases, but on doing what's right. Kyle, welcome to the show. I'm really looking forward to unpacking your journey, both as a legal expert and as a business owner who clearly leads with his heart.
Well, thank you so much, Jamie. I really appreciate it. It's an honor to be with you today.
So take us back to that moment at 17 when you argued in front of a mock Supreme Court. Did you know then that law would be your path?
Heck no. We had an opportunity in high school to miss school for a couple of days. I was in Florida, go to Tallahassee, do like this legislative day. There were going to be girls on the trip and I was ready to go.
You're sold.
I was told I was in and we had an important project to accomplish up there and had the opportunity to pretend like I was a lawyer and make an argument in the Supreme Court chambers with lawyers who were pretending to be justices. And I ended up getting one of the awards for best oral argument. And it was after that event, going back to my high school and thinking to myself, wow, maybe I could do this for a living. It ended up being really fun. And that is truly was kind of the ideology for me to decide, hey, I think I'm going to be a lawyer.
That's really, really cool. So, it's kind of a big jump though, from being that moment and then launching your firm with just $15,000 in a brand new state. Like, talk to me about that gap.
Yeah. So I moved out to Colorado. I had worked for a couple of years for a personal injury firm. I started the Monday after law school down in Florida working for a personal injury firm. When I decided to move to Colorado, I was like, this is what I want to do. I really was drawn to the work and went to work for a firm here and then met my law partner, Darren Shanker. And probably less than 2 years into working together, we decided we were going to, let's go create our own law firm. And so we had this idea, you go see how much home equity you have for a second. We were in our starter homes. He's going to go check on his home equity. I'm going to check on mine. We're going to reconvene. Fast forward, we come back and Darren says, they'll loan me $0.00. And I said, well, they'll loan me $13,800. And we decided that we were going to start this practice. And we were in a little bar called the Cherry Cricket in Denver, and we were there and we actually wrote out, I wish we still had it on paper, that we were going to do this. And if we went out of business, he was going to owe me $7,000. And we took that home equity loan. And part of the agreement, Jamie, was I was going to get paid $500 a month for the first 6 months. And that's what happened. And so I got paid $500 for the first 6 months per month. And Darren would come over after his regular day job and help work to build the practice. And so that's how we literally started this. And we knew, boy, we're going to either run out of money or we're going to make it work. And we hit the ground. I went to every law firm that did personal injury in the city and said, send me what you don't want to take. Like, send me your garbage. Send me what you don't want. And if I have a big case, I'll call and maybe co-counsel with you. And that's how we started the law firm, was on those referrals.
That's actually a really good strategy. I was going to kind of poke fun a little bit about early business planning decisions and how you, like, you know, laid out your foundation for your long-term success, and just hearing how you wrote it all down at a bar and took out home equity loans. I'm like, hey, business owners, take notes. Yeah. You know, this is what you do. I'm sure that on a list of things of what not to do, those things are going to be at the top of the list. But I actually think that leaning into your community of other injury attorneys, that's what a great strategy that is.
Yeah. And I'll tell you that, you know, yes, it was a big risk, but, you know, because I was already a lawyer, right? I knew, like, what was the worst thing that could come from this risk. And I'd already taken the risk of moving from the state of Florida to the state of Colorado, where I didn't know anybody. And so I think I might've been a little bit emboldened, and I was going to bet on myself, right? And so I said, you know what? What's the worst thing that can happen? I guess the worst thing that can happen is I'm going to lose $14,000. Darren's going to pay me $7,000 back. I'm going to be $7,000 in the hole, and I'll go get another job. I knew, because of my background, that I could get a job. So, and I didn't have kids at the time, and I wasn't married at the time. And so I felt like, hey, it was a time to bet on myself.
That's a really good point. And that's actually a characteristic that I've seen people who have been doing this a really long time bet on themselves early on. They were very confident in where it was going to go. They weren't sure, even if it wasn't going to pan out. I think there's this sense, and I think I faced it as well 10 years ago when I was starting Seeker Solution, in that I wasn't sure that it was going to work. I didn't know if Seeker Solution was going to be a thing 10, 20, you know, hopefully 30 years down the line. But I did know that I was going to be okay. I knew that I had the skill set to, you know, land on my feet no matter what. And I think that's a really important point to make. And that's why, you know, sometimes early on, your circumstances might be that you can take that kind of a risk. Like, you weren't really, for you, it wasn't that big of a risk. It was, at the end of the day, $7,000 that was really wrapped up in home equity. You still had the home, I assume. You still had the ability to get a job. So there weren't a whole lot of downsides to that, especially because the main factor was just betting on yourself.
And I think, looking back, you know, I said to myself, what was I going to regret more, doing this or not doing this?
That point, and right there.
That's a big motivator. If you say, look, I could take this chance, or I can't, or I won't take the chance. And I knew which one I would regret, and it would have been not taking the chance. And then once I made the decision, man, I literally was all in, and I was all in on a very small budget. I mean, we rented an executive suite, one room, 10 by 10, one desk, two chairs, and truthfully, there's a Target store just right across the street from where this building was. And at the time, they had a little cafeteria there, and I ate every lunch. I walked over to Target and I ate at the Target, whatever the special was, like $1.99, you could get a hot dog, potato chips, and a drink. And that, if that's what it was, that's what I ate, because I was all in. And it was an incredible time. I mean, I remember when we started getting opportunities to meet with clients, we didn't really have an office to bring them to. We just had this executive suite. We'd go to their house. Darren would go. He had an old beater car, and he was like, yeah, sometimes his car wouldn't start back up. Truthfully, this is like his. And so he would park his car like a block away from where the meeting was going to be, so they didn't see his car, and he'd leave it running the entire meeting and would go in to meet with the clients to sign the case up. That's where we were at the time.
That's crazy. And you mentioned that staying connected to your why has been really crucial. And that's the piece that I really love. How did you keep that clarity through years and years of growth, being able to just kind of stay centered and hold on to that? I think sometimes it's easy to lose sight of that, but you're still talking about that.
Yeah. And I'll say that, you know, from day one to the present time, we've been energized to do one thing, and that is to build something that was large enough to compete against billion-dollar insurance companies that have all the money in the world, and to be able to do that successfully, and to be able to invest in the cases. And in our industry, unlike most, we only get paid at the end, right? So we have to pick cases We get paid at the end. We have to put our money up front on those cases, or the cases don't go anywhere. And we started very small. And we're like, you know, what's our long-term goal to be the best in what we're doing? And so that continues from really, it was from the day that we decided why we wanted to build a law firm, what we wanted it to look like. I still every day, right? And that was, by the way, that's a long time ago. That was 1996, right? That's a long time ago. From that day to this day, I still wake up with the same desire to continue to build the biggest, best, strongest law firm and really be able to, as a lawyer, what I try to tell young lawyers and other business people, like, would you want to hire you, right? And if you, when you ask yourself, in whatever industry you're in and whoever you're competing against, we all know who our competitors are. Look and ask yourself, would you want to hire you? Honestly, if it were all on the line, would you want to hire you? And if you can't say yes to that, you got to work until you can say yes to that, right? And then once you can say yes to that, how do you sustain that? And then how do you, because then it's easy for me to say, I want every case in the market because every person in the market would be better off if they were with my law firm as opposed to my competitors. And that's kind of a driving force. You know, we've got more than 30 lawyers who work for us, 5 offices, you know, more than 125 employees in our enterprise. And it's all based upon that theory.
That's wonderful. And it's really kind of interesting how life plays out, right? Like, you really were passionate about this very specific type of law from day one. I mean, that's where you started. And then you find yourself in personally affected by it. And it sounds like already just the kind of person you are, type of leader you are, you already were looking internally. Just the fact that you're like, hey, the buck stops here with me. Would I hire me? Having that kind of philosophy and then having something like, you know, the experience with the tragic loss of your mom. How did your personal experience shift? Did it even shift any approach to client relationships, advocacy, things like that? Because it sounded like it kind of catapulted you into this, you know, that next direction.
Yeah, man, really, Jamie, that's a great question because, I mean, can you imagine kind of the irony? You know, unlike a lot of people, when you do the work that I do, I do understand the randomness with which people get taken off of the face of this earth or badly injured, you know, when they've done nothing other than go about their day. And in the back of your mind, when you do it for so many years, you just are like, God, I hope I'm never on the receiving end of that call. And unfortunately, 5 years ago, it happened. My mom was out on a COVID walk in Winter Park, Florida, walking across the street 5 blocks from her lakefront home, and a concrete mixer truck took a right-hand turn. My mom was in the crosswalk with the walk sign. It was all recorded, and I've never watched it, but I've spoken. But she's run over and killed by a concrete mixer truck on broad daylight. And then I end up 5 years ago getting a call, right? My sister calling me and saying the Winter Park police were at her house and that mom had been killed tonight. And man, that's no matter how much work in the space that I've done over the years, you know, you can't imagine getting that call. And I'm a fixer by nature, if you can't figure that out. And I want to fix anything and everything. And if you're a fixer, and most entrepreneurs are kind of fixers, give me a problem and we'll solve it. Some problems can't be solved. And when your mom is killed, you know, there's nothing to solve except trying to gain some sort of perspective onto how it happened, getting accountability for it and whatever that might mean to a particular family, and then trying to make sure it never happens again to anybody else. In my particular case, was also like a really cathartic experience just professionally, because I got to see for the first time what it's like to be on the victim side. And what I learned, and I've got a brother and sister, my parents were divorced when we were kids, but my brother and sister and I had to deal with everything. My mom's pets, her house, her all the belongings, the probate, on top of trying to, we weren't able to have a funeral at the time because it was right during COVID, but all of the things. And what I recognized when my sister was asking me, well, so Kyle, the guy who killed mom, like, he's going to go to jail for a long time, right? And the reality is, no, he's not, because careless driving doesn't send you to jail in most instances. Drunk driving would if you killed somebody, of course, or intentionally, but not careless. And all of this stuff that was being asked, and I came to this realization really because I was looking for a resource for my sister. I said, let me go find online, find something that can explain to you what this process is going to be like. And I couldn't find anything. What I actually found were every time I looked on Google, some attorney ad popped up that said, like, congratulations, your relative's killed. Let's get you a bunch of money. And I realized, wow, I wonder if my, because we hire marketing companies to go market for us, as do other firms. I wonder if I'm marketing in the same way. Look up and sure enough, the same stuff that I was seeing, we were doing the same. And so it really made me take a step back and say, boy, how are we putting ourselves out there? What are we really trying to accomplish? And then the practice that I have, the civil law, you know, I was doing this slice and doing it great, but you have these very holistic needs and I'm doing this slice. And so I really changed everything about the way that our firm and the way I'm trying to teach other lawyers around the country to handle especially wrongful death cases. When I came back to the firm after taking a couple of weeks off after my mom was killed, you know, the whisper was, don't give Kyle any more death cases, as if it was going to remind me that my mom was killed, when in fact, I wanted every one of them. I felt like who better to speak to these families to understand. So I took over all of the wrongful death cases in our firm. I built a team around us and I said, we're going to hire victims advocates. We're going to do this very holistic. We're going to do whatever they need. We're going to get them with probate lawyers. We're going to help them sell the house if we need to put them in contact with a real estate agent. We're going to do everything for these families because they're literally, you know, it's like you're falling into space when something like that happens to your family. And so we have built an incredible group of people that is victims-centric and that is this very holistic, and it's redefined my practice. Our practice does lots of stuff. You know, we have all kinds of cases, but I'm taking over and have assumed responsibility for the practice group involving wrongful death. And it's been a real legacy to my mom. And it caused me to write a book that you spoke about, Unthinkable. I wrote that book as a gift to families who are going through what we went through. It's kind of a step-by-step of, man, I'm sorry this happened to you. Let's talk about what happens next and the police investigation and everything that we just discussed.
Yeah, and the feelings too, I'd imagine, because you were feeling them yourselves. And I think that it's funny because you were saying how the natural response from your team was to like kind of protect you from that. And I'm like, I've been talking to you for 10 minutes and I knew exactly what you were going to say. And like, no, give them all to me. And I think, and I'm also having that like, you know, this like existential moment too of just being a mom myself and knowing it sounding like, you know, the relationship that you had with your mom, even though you didn't talk about that, I can tell that they were a very big part of, you know, you, who you are today and your upbringing and everything. And what bigger role would, you know, could she have ever played in your life when it comes to your business and your career and how you practice law and how you relate to victims and put things in place? A mother could only hope so much that she could, you know, give that to you and give you that kind of perspective in her life. You know, if she couldn't do that in her life, like what a huge, like, you know, thing. Like I just know as a mom, I hope that my kids can walk away with something like you saying legacy, and this was a legacy for my mom and things like that. Like I can only hope that my kids would take something like that away and I could give something to them with the life that I've lived. And just hearing you talk about her and all of that, if anything were to come from this, what a gift that is. And I think when you're talking about being solutions and solving problems and how, oh, you can't really solve the death problem, well, the solution really comes in the people that are left behind. And not just with you and your family, but you're now helping families beyond that are also going through that. So her life has really impacted so many more people than could ever imagine. So I'm just, it makes me, as I'm thinking about now and sending my kids off into the world as they're starting to get that age. And I've got a couple of young adults who have left the home. And my husband and I are talking a lot about legacy and thinking about, you know, hey, what are they going to do with their lives and how are they going to land, and watching them kind of figure that out. And as much as tragedy is surrounding all of this, I'm getting just a breath of fresh air and hope in your perspective and your experience and you know, not wanting to hear that that happened 5 years ago and thinking about that those things could still happen to us and our families. And also, if it does, hey, this is part of life, and having the skills and knowing what you're going to do, you know, after that is what a gift that is.
Yeah, you know, and I'll tell you, if you think about the long game, it's really weird. I sometimes wondered as I went through the path of, through the grief of the loss of my mom, is like, you know, I ended up in personal injury space. I ended up growing this practice, ended up being in a position to help these people. And then this occurs, and it's in some ways, maybe this was the plan all along, right? That I was going to be kind of called upon to help these families after experiencing this loss myself. And it really has been, it's been terrific. And I look at just, you know, just last month, right? Just through my personal website alone regarding the book, 900 people purchased that book around the country just in the month of April. And I think about how many families are being touched and assisted and helped around the country by this information that was tragic and terrible and awful for my family, but it's helping people all over the country.
Wow, that's a big number. And yeah. I think, you know, I can talk to you for, I feel like I want to talk to you for so much longer about so many things. I mean, if this can make such a difference to me in a, you know, 20-minute conversation, I'd imagine that the work that you're doing with these families is really, really making an impact. But Kyle, we always end with this, and we, you know, our podcast is called What It Takes, and you've talked a lot about what it's taken for you in your journey. So in your experience, what does it take to be a business owner, you know, regardless of the things that you experience in your outside life? I mean, because you still had at the end of the day, you had a business to run, and you've built that up and you've done that. So I'm interested to hear your perspective on this.
So I think that the number one thing is kind of this relentless pursuit of your dreams, right? I think that there, and we hear it all kinds of connotations, but there are dreamers and there are doers. Everybody has an idea. Everybody has a dream. What are you doing each and every day to make it come true? And if you really commit to it, that means you commit to it even when things look awful, even when, like, you have to be willing to lose to win. You have to be willing to understand that you're never going to be successful. You're never going to be able to build a business where every day you show up and only good things happen, right? So it's relentlessly pursuing it through every single problem that comes your way. And I think if you do that, if you really care about it that much, you'll be successful.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I can see that kind of from day one with you, you know, in the first, you know, forming of your business to now. I hear that same, like you said, you know, I don't doubt it that you feel the same way as you did then. I can see that from you. So listeners, this is Kyle Backus, a leader who reminds us that justice, business, even like humanity, it doesn't have to be separate. It's all together. I mean, your life's work is that. You came from a high school courtroom situation to running one of Colorado's top law firms. You know, Kyle's story is about growth. It's about purpose. It's about really staying grounded is what I'm seeing. Staying grounded through it all. So if you're building a business that you want to be proud of, one that reflects your values and serves people in a real way, Kyle's journey is really one to remember. So to our listeners out there, Kyle, who maybe are in your area, want to get in touch with you, maybe want to get one of your books, has had some tragic experience in their lives, whatnot, how can they find you?
So I have a website that is Kyle Backus, Bachus, kylebackus.com. And that website will put you in touch with the book if you're interested in the book. I mean, Forbes put it on a list of life hack books in the summer of 2022. So it's I think it's really important and great information. But if I can do anything to encourage anybody or help anybody in any way, that's a great way to reach me.
That's great. And thanks for listening to What It Takes. We will catch you next time with more stories from the minds behind the mission. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is brought to you by Seeker Solution. Are you a business owner feeling overwhelmed? We can help. Head over to seekersolution.com to schedule a call today. Would you or someone you know like to be featured on this podcast? Our applications are now open. Apply today at seekersolution.com and click on the podcast link to get started.